Kevin Harlan here. Tonight at 5:30 Eastern, the NBA on Prime Crew is back as the Emirates NBA action heats up from Vegas for a thrilling semifinals doubleheader. Then on Tuesday night, December 16th at 8:30 Eastern, the last two teams standing will square off in the championship game for a shot at the cup, bragging rights, and a place in NBA history. And Prime is your exclusive home for it all. Not a Prime member? Sign up for a free 30-day trial to get started today. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details. Don't miss the thrilling conclusion of the Emirates NBA Cup live from Las Vegas, starting with the semifinals tonight, only on Prime.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Jane doesn't mind an apartment with no elevator.
5 flights of stairs is 5 flights of cardio.
Bob is a little less enthusiastic about stairs.
I hate stairs.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle renters and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Jane and Bob found an apartment that's a 4-story walk-up. And Bob?
Yeah, there's a freight elevator she doesn't know about.
What were you talking about?
Nothing.
Bundling without compromise at Geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, well, my goodness. If it isn't that time again, and where are we? What is it, the Ides of June? Wow, June 15th. Boy, oh boy, happy to be sitting here in the basement, even though it is the basement, but I'm still happy. I'll tell you why in just a little bit. Well, one of the reasons I can tell you now, my gosh, this week's guest is, you know, there are some who throw the word hero around a little too often, and there are some who don't use it enough. I like to think that I'm in the middle, and I'm going to tell you, that word certainly applies to this week's guest. I'm talking, of course, about you. Oh, my gosh. Will you look at yourself? Oh, you look great. I hope you're feeling good as well. Thank you for being here with me for that Josh Arnold podcast. Man, oh, man. June 15th. What are we, 5 days away from summer solstice? I think it's on the 20th this year. So it's not officially summer, but we know, don't we? We know it's summer's pretty much here, and we'll be talking about some summery things. But first, I would like to thank and talk a little bit about our sponsor this week. Boy, it's a good one. And, you know... If you thought our sponsors were getting a little out of control a couple weeks ago when The Sun sponsored the show, well, wait until you find out who's sponsoring us this week. A very important sponsor, a necessary sponsor. Our sponsor this week, the digestive system. That's right. What would we do without it? My goodness. I mean, we put food into our mouths, and digestion really begins there, doesn't it? Saliva, hey, it ain't just there to lubricate the old head hole. No, it's got some digestive enzymes in there that help to break down the food immediately. And not to mention the chewing. I mean, yeah, that's done. Mastication, if you will, with the jaws and the teeth, and then, boy... But as soon as that saliva hits, digestion has begun. And then, of course, it makes its way through, doesn't it? Otherwise, we'd just be putting food in our body and it would sit there. Ugh. That way, we wouldn't absorb any of the nutrients. We wouldn't be able to retain any of the calories. Nothing. Nothing would happen. It would just sit in our bodies without the digestive system. And we don't have to get into... the end parts of the, you know, the excretory system. We don't need to get into, but just the digestive system. It's very important, and I think you know that. You know what one of my favorite things about the digestive system is? It's involuntary. You don't have to focus on any of it. You eat something, and it goes, you know what? I've got this. I'll take it from here, and you don't even have to think about it. So can you imagine if you did, if it was a voluntary response? We got to go, oh, sorry, guys, I got to take 20 minutes and really think about breaking down the food that I've put in my body. And no, it does it itself. And I sure am thankful for that. And I sure am thankful that the digestive system is this week's sponsor. I hope you get to enjoy your digestive system very, very soon. And you know what I've been digesting a lot of lately? This is a bit of a change for me, and I'm excited to share this with you. This is the second big news this week. The first big news in the old Arnold household, I'll tell you right now, I got six new pairs of socks. That's right, six new pairs of socks. They came in a bundle, if you will. I had some cash for, you know, a department store where they, if you buy things there, they will give you that department store cash that you can then, and we all know what I'm talking about. I could mention it. There's no rule saying I can't, but I'm not going to until they throw me a little real cash, not just their cash, all right? So... Do you think that would ever happen? Anyway, you know what though? This company does. I came up with a Christmas slogan for this company one year, and they should use it. They should. It would sell gift cards. It would sell their gift cards, and the ad would show a gift card sticking out of a stocking nailed to a mantle there with a nice fire. You guys know the sort of holiday imagery I'm going for, and it would just say this year. Put a little Kohl's in their stocking. Why they haven't used that yet, I have no idea. Now, if you happen to work for that department store and you share that idea, I just want a little cut. You can throw some gift cards my way or even some of your own cash. You know what I'm saying. This year, put a little Kohl's in their stocking. What's the matter? Too good? Yeah, is that why you haven't used it yet? Just reward me if I see it this year. Someone's got some splaining to do. And you know what? You don't even owe me an explanation. Just send me a little something, okay? So anyway, I had some of that cash, and I went, man, I better use this before it expires. Bought myself six new pairs of socks, and nothing fancy. I'm not afraid to tell you. I'm a loyal Hanes man myself when it comes to underwear. Of all kinds, t-shirts and boxers and socks. I love the product. And boy, I tell you what, I think we take for granted just how good a new pair of socks feels. They're great. And I think I'm on like pair four. So I still have two new pair to wear before they enter the laundry cycle. And I'm enjoying the heck out of them. So that's big news. From the old Arnold household. Oh, in case you're wondering, they are low-cut black. That's right. Maybe ankle. I forget exactly. I'm not like, they're not totally no-shows. So I think they're ankle because you can see a little bit of them in my shoe, but not a lot. Anyway. and I needed them. I did. I think I'm sitting on, now I'm sitting on maybe 12... No, I had more than six. I'm going to say I had eight pair originally, so I've got about 14 pair now. I felt like my socks were running out a little too quickly, and so I wanted to get more. Okay.
Whatever.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, anyway, the second big news, and this does relate to the digestive system. Man, lately, I have to confess, I am hooked on PubMix. You guys know what I'm talking about. It's that combination. It's got just like eight different crispy things in it and some seasoning. And there are all kinds of PubMix out there. I can't get enough of it right now. And the weird thing is, when I was a kid, I didn't care for it. And even as an early adult, I didn't really care for Chex Mix or PubMix. To me, it was chaos. There were too many different textures, and the flavor was kind of all over the place, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so my taste buds essentially rejected it. I went, this is too much. And what I would end up doing is if there were like Chex Mix or PubMix, I would just eat the pretzels out of it because I could recognize those flavors. And I love pretzels, so that was me. But something's happened, and I am now like, I mean, this PubMix, we have it here at work, and what I do is I take the tub of it. I mean, it's essentially in a big bulk tub, and I bring it down to the basement with me, and I enjoy it while I prepare for this. And boy, I'm hooked. I think I'm trying to make up for like the last four, like essentially, because I started eating it maybe, it's real recent. So I'm making up for like 40, I just turned 43, so like essentially 42 years of not eating it. And I think I'm going to eat 42 years worth in the next couple months because I can't stop. You know, yeah, we all get this way, right? You all of a sudden you go, man, I'm really craving this whatever. And you eat it and you go, I didn't get enough. And so like for like 3 weeks, maybe it's just me, but for like 3 weeks, it's like that's what your dietary focus is on. I don't know why, but I'm not tired of it. And I love it. And it's kind of like when you hear a new song and you're like, oh my gosh, I've got to listen to that again and again and again. And then eventually the novelty or the newness sort of wears off and you go, okay, well, the shimmer's a little, it's kind of gone now. And maybe you even develop a taste aversion to whatever. And you're like, man, I've been eating. What I'm going to do is not let myself get to that point. I will Seinfeld it, the TV show. I'll stop at my peak and it won't get stale.
And I'll tell you what, the PubMix won't get stale either because I'm going to eat it before it does.
We have fun, right? So anyway, those are the new. And I tell you what, the PubMix has been brightening up this murky, really humid, damp basement. I you know, in the winter, it's crazy cold, but at least it's dry. Now that it's getting hot, it's humid down here and a little musty, quite frankly. So I say we take a little break from the basement right now and hop aboard the TJA Express. That's right, the Arntrap, the world's only steam monorail. It takes us out to some destination or two and brings us right back. Monorail, you see. So today, I wonder where we're stopping off. I see that we're somewhere, and I'll just kind of look out the window here. And I don't recognize anything yet. Perhaps. Oh, I have the curtain closed. All right, I'll open up the curtain of the window, and hey, look, we're in Vocabville. My goodness, if all the Vocabvillians aren't walking about, learning new words, and ready to teach us a new word that we can add to our own vocabulary. And today we get a double dose, same word, but there's an adjective version and a noun version of this word. And since it is summer, well, not officially, I know, June 20th, but I thought we would discuss a word that we can add to our vocabulary that pertains to the beach. Now, I know the beach, pluses and minuses, right? When you go to the beach, a lot of good about it and a lot of bad about it. But this is a word that hopefully you can use. We'll start with the adjective version. The word is literal. And I don't mean L-I-T-E-R-A-L. I mean literal, L-I-T-T-O-R-A-L. Literal. What does that rhyme with? I can't think of anything. I guess that would be littoral, but literal. I guess it depends on who your doctor is. But some would say littoral, some would say literal. Anyway, ladies, email me. Let me know what I'm teasing. So, literal. It means the adjective means essentially relating to or something growing near the shore. So seashells are literal. Oh, yeah, we were in a literal area, and we found a bunch of seashells. Or, my gosh, if we didn't see some jellyfish washed up in that literal space over there. Now, that's where the noun part can also come in. The noun version of literal means the area of the shore between high tide and low tide. So, you've all seen it. You go on a beach and you go, oh, well, you can clearly tell that high tide is there because that's the sand is sort of damp and then it becomes dry and right there on that line. You can see it, so that must be high tide. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, low tide is only reaching here. So this area in between is literal. That's the literal area. So I think that's the area of the shore is more of the noun, and then the stuff that grows near the shore. Or anything relating to it. The beachgoers spent their day in a literal spot. So they were, of course, bathing on the shore. So kind of fun, kind of interesting. And one of those words that you can annoy the people you're with. So I like it. So the next time, particularly... we all love finding seashells and stuff like that. You can definitely use it while you're doing that. Just go, oh, these I believe there are some seashells either on the literal part of the beach, or my gosh, these seashells are literal. Yes, do that, and impress everybody. So, what a nice visit to Vocabville. Very summary. And, I see that we're off again. We're moving down the track there. And, we're slowing. We don't seem to be heading directly back to the basement. I wonder where we're stopping now. Ah, don't you love that whistle? Man, oh, man. I need to get on a train soon. I do. Oh, holy cow. I believe this is our first visit to a place that we've all heard of, and now we actually get to be there. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, in Music Junction. My gosh, who doesn't love Music Junction? We're all fans of melody and song, and now we get to discuss some of our favorites. And boy, do I have a treat to talk about with you. You guys know, for the most part, that I have eclectic tastes in music. I love what I call angry youth music. So sort of your heavier, I guess what's primarily known as active rock. I love it. I love Slipknot and Breaking Benjamin and Chevelle and Static X and all. I love all that noise. Korn. Oh man, I go see all those bands whenever I can, and I love it. Puts me in a great mood. See, for me, active rock doesn't do what I think some people think it does. Like, a lot of it is angry, and a lot of it is dark, and you know, maybe even on the surface a little sinister, things like that. But for me, it's like all about blowing off steam. That music does not create those feelings in me. It exercises them. And I don't mean working out. I mean like exercising demons. It really helps release a lot of, you know, whatever it is that's going on. You know, maybe some tension, maybe some stress. And, yeah, it's just a really good time. And when you go to a Slipknot show or you go to, man, I remember going to a number of Ozfests back in the day where it's just a full day, like 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. of angry young man music. And I say young man, but trust me, there were just as many chicks out there exercising their demons as well. And the thing about it is nobody was like, occasionally you would see a fight or whatever, but that happens pretty much anywhere where there's a lot of people and booze. Okay, so you can see that at a I guarantee you a fight has broken out at a Wiggles concert at some point. But I know I'd be tempted to fight. But at these shows, there's not a lot of anger. It's a lot of like really happy people celebrating the music and everything. So anyway, the music that I'm going to talk about today is another one of my favorite genres. It's essentially outlaw country. I love it. I'm a huge fan. And my fandom grows stronger every day when it comes to this genre. You've heard me talk about James McMurtry and Paul Cawthon and stuff. Well, there's a gentleman that I have really, really grown to love. I loved him immediately, actually. He was one of those guys where I heard a song and I went, who is this? I need to explore his catalog. His name is Tyler Childers. And what I'd like you to listen to, it's available on Spotify and I'm sure elsewhere. I happen to listen to it on Spotify. It's called Live on Red Barn Radio 1 and 2. And it together, the 1 and 2, it lasts 30 minutes. So 30 minutes of terrific live outlaw country that kind of borders on bluegrass at times. And it is just wonderful. And if you don't listen to the whole thing, do yourself a favor and listen to my favorite cut from those sessions. It's called Charleston Girl, and these came out in 2018. And this song, Charleston Girl, that Tyler wrote, and it kills me. It is one of my new favorite songs, and it's one of the things I love about new alt country or outlaw country, country's always had kind of a. It can get a little dark too, can't it? And the guys, the new class of country, sort of, and not necessarily the pop country, but this, like your Chris Stapletons and folks of that ilk. Oh my gosh, one of my other favorites. Unfortunately, his name is eluding me. I'm going to look it up as we speak because I don't want to leave him out. But guys like Cody Jinks. And, I cannot believe but let's see. Okay. Sorry. The dead, Sturgill Simpson, of course, that's his name. Sturgill Simpson. All these guys are doing some really amazing country, but it gets real and dark and they're talking about, you know, some pretty raw things. And, the song Charleston Girl gets fairly raw and, man, I mean, I feel every word, even if I can't totally relate to the scenario, I can. And I think you'll find that to be the same, too. The specifics, you may not, might be new to you, but the situation certainly, man, oh, man. It's simultaneously heartbreaking and also semi-hopeful. And I really recommend the whole thing, the Tyler Childers Live on Red Barn Radio 1 and 2. But if you only listen to one, give Charleston Girl a shot. And trust me, it's country. There's banjo, and you're not going to mistake the genre. But and if that's not your thing, that's totally fine, of course. But maybe still give it a listen and see if this style is maybe more up your alley. Anyway, I recommend it. What a nice visit to Music Junction. And I hope that you enjoy Tyler, and if you do, let me know. You can always email me, joshpodcast@bobandtom.com. And why don't we, now that we're making our way back to the basement here, why don't we look over a couple questions that some of you have sent in? It's always great to hear from you guys. John has written in. Oh, and he has a question about the Bob and Tom show. He says, nothing makes me laugh more than when people lose it on the big show. Sometimes you'll even get yourself laughing on your podcast. Yeah, I do. I can't help it. I'm an idiot. So, but he loves to laugh with me. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Well, John has a question that a lot of people we'll ask about, and some even have their own theories about, and I'll talk about them. He says, how difficult is it to hear the same jokes or songs over and over and over again and force out a chuckle so that people hearing it for the first time get the hint that it's funny? He's talking, of course, about the Bob and Tom Show. So what will happen is, yes, I mean, we repeat bits, and occasionally we'll even tell the same joke. Let's say I make a joke that's improvised at 7:30. Well, if that topic comes up again at 9:30, I may go ahead and repeat that joke. Now, the reasoning behind that is the experts, the radio experts, have proven time and time again with studies and with the surveys and with technology that they use to measure listenership. It's safe to say that our audience changes. The majority of the listeners change every 15 minutes. So if you're one of the people that listens all morning, you are going to hear some repeated stuff. But just keep in mind that most people are hearing it for the first time. So the person that heard a joke, or maybe let's say one of Pat Godwin's songs at 7 a.m., they're not the same people listening at 9 a.m. So those that are, that do listen all morning, are in the minority. And that's not to say that people don't want to listen to all 4 hours. Obviously, they just have things going on. They are either going to work, and then they get there and they can't listen, or they start listening when they get to work because they're talking to their kids or whoever in the car before the, you know, so there are lots of reasons why a lot of people don't listen to all 4 hours, or at least not in the morning. They'll go back and they'll listen on the 24/7 or whatever. So anyway, so yes, things do get repeated. Now, I'll tell you this. There is not a lot of fake laughter going on in the studio. And I would venture to guess almost none. And I know what's happening right now. Some of you are going, I don't believe you. I simply don't believe you. Well, let me tell you this. And even John, he says, Tom's slow, methodical, deep, one-syllable ha is obviously forced. Man. I'm going to say, while I'm not 100% sure, I don't think that's forced. I think that's one of his laughs. Because here's the thing. When Tom doesn't think something is funny, he tells you he didn't think it was funny. he either doesn't laugh, or he'll go, well, that sucked all the air out of the room, or some comment to let you know that whatever it was that was just said wasn't funny. While we're all generous laughers, we're not usually fake laughers. A chick doesn't ever fake laugh. even if one of us or a guest is essentially begging him to, he just won't. He loves, as he should, genuine reactions, and you're only going to get genuine reactions from him, whether it be a big laugh or total indifference. And he would tell you the same. I laugh a lot, but I really do not fake laugh. If I'm laughing at something that I heard, that I'm hearing for the second or third or 20th time, it's because A, I either genuinely still find it funny, or B, sometimes I'm laughing because I can't believe the joke is being done again. So there's that. Sometimes I'm laughing at either a nuance about the joke or how it was delivered. For example, when Pat Godwin does the, for those of you who listen to the Bob and Tom Show know this, when he does the Gardner Minshew song for literally the 22nd time, I'm telling you, he is acting like it's the first time he's done it. Even if he mentions, okay, this is the 50th time Tom's making me do this. And I have the luxury of being able to watch him in person. So, and if you are a VIP member or you watch on YouTube or later or whatever, you can see that he's really giving it his all. So sometimes I'm not laughing at the same line that I've heard over and over. I'm laughing at his performance, either a face that he makes or some noise that he vamps during the middle of it or some weird motion that he made with his arm or his head, because he really gets into it and it's really fun. Sometimes I'm also laughing at a face that somebody else in the studio is making. So if, let's say, Chick is worn out by a particular bit or joke, as it's being told and delivered, I will be looking at him, and he'll be so funny in his anger, whether it be real or fake or whatever, that I'm laughing at that, even though it may sound like I'm laughing at what's being said. So there's a lot going on. A lot of people do, I think, accuse the show of having canned laughter or fake laughter. I think it's unfair. Now, before I was ever involved with the show, I was just a major fan. I remember listening to one album where the end of almost every bit, there was laughter added to it. It was genuine laughter, but it was put, I think, in a disingenuous spot. And I've actually questioned the producers of the album and said, hey, what was the reasoning there? And I've gotten a couple different answers. None of them satisfied me as a nitpicky fan. I didn't like that real laughter was added in a an artificial way. But, you know, what do I know? That's just my opinion. So since I'm not a big fan of that sort of laughter, the fake forced laughter, I try not to do it. And I think we're all pretty successful at, especially since we have so much fun teasing each other about jokes that bomb and stuff like that. A lot of times we're able to find more comedy in a bad joke than if the joke worked. So we have more fun with the stuff that fails. So, again, if you think I'm full of it, I can't, there's not much I can do other than tell you, you know, I really don't think Christy, the only thing Christy I think will fake every now and again is when she says she doesn't get something because she's just playing sort of in that moment, she's playing she's doing one of two things. She's either being a playful dimwit, and we all know that she's not. She's incredibly intelligent. And also, or sometimes we will take the role of an audience member who might not be aware of something. So if, let's say, there's an obscure reference made, which happens a lot, but everybody in the room knows what it is, one of us will go, what are you talking about? What does that even mean? I don't get it. That way it's explained for listeners who may not get it. This happens in movies all the time. There's always the character that's the rookie or the new guy or the fish out of water who, when the scientists are talking about the asteroid that's about to hit the Earth and they're using technical jargon, the new reporter who's been thrown into the situation to talk about, or, you know, to report, goes, now what does that mean exactly? And that character is in there to explain everything to you, the audience. So it's a device. So occasionally we will employ that device. And is that 100% genuine? No, but sometimes it's 100% necessary. And it really does aid in the show. So if we ever do anything that seems fake, there's a reason behind it. We're not trying to insult the intelligence of the audience or anything like that. In fact, we're trying to benefit the listener. So what else, John, you just love it when people lose their mind with laughter. I do too, man. It's so funny. I love hearing people. That's also one of the reasons why when Tom will tease me and I go, oh, sure, yeah, another joke about me being overweight or me watching porn or whatever. He laughs so hard at his own jokes. And Godwin also gets a really big kick out of that stuff. That I don't get that upset about it, because I also know where their hearts are, but they're getting such a kick out of it and laughing so hard that it's infectious. I like that they're enjoying themselves, and so it's a good time. I'm trying to think if there's now. Sometimes we're more generous with like if a really good friend of mine is on the show. I keep trying to talk myself into the fact that we will occasionally fake our laughter, and I can't do it. It's not sitting with me because that's not what we're doing. So yeah, okay. What else do we have here? Corey writes that. He's asking. He knows I love movies. And so, and books and stuff like that. His questions are, do you have a favorite actor and a favorite genre? I figure it's horror, but maybe not. Yeah. So, favorite actor. I don't have one favorite actor. So what I'm going to do is just off the top of my head, list off some of my favorites. People that I see in movies or even if I know that there's a new so-and-so movie that I'll just go see because I know they're in it. So this does. My favorite actors include, and in no particular order because I'm just going to list these again off the top of my head, Paul Giamatti, Oliver Platt, Steve Martin, Tom Hanks, Bill Murray, what I would like to do, a lot of them are just your basics, Pacinos, De Niro's, Brando's, that kind of thing. So what I would also like to do, what I would like to do now is list some actors whose names I want you to look out for that you might not be familiar, that are becoming more and more popular, but you might not totally be familiar with. So, these are guys that I think are incredible actors that aren't necessarily leading men, but you've probably seen them in something. So, I'm also going to be looking up some of these guys as I'm talking, because I want to try to do my best to tell you what you may have seen them in. The first guy is a guy named David Costable, who was in Mad Men. He played, what was his character's name? I'm gonna look it up. He played Gale. He cooked meth with Walter White for a little while, and he's also on the show Billions, and he was in Lincoln and all that. He is as good as it gets acting wise right now. An actor named Garrett Dillahunt, who's in a bunch of stuff, is just terrific. Recently, I think I saw him in Army of the Dead. And every time I see his name in the credits, I get really excited because I know, oh, man, okay. A great supporting cast. I love it. Glenn Fleischler is a guy who... is another guy, when I see his name in the credits, I go, oh, awesome, sweet. We are in for a treat here. He was in True Detective. He's also in Billions. He's in The Joker, and he plays kind of a bully to Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. Keep an eye out for those gentlemen. Favorite actresses. I have a ton. I think Kate Winslet and Kate Blanchett. And you know who one of my favorite actresses is, who I think is underrated as an actress? Jennifer Aniston is so great. And I'm going to give you three movies that, if you don't believe me, you should watch. The Good Girl, Friends with Money, and Cake. She is amazing in all three of those. And not only should she have been nominated, for Cake for Best Actress. She should have won Best Actress that year. Just a heartbreaking performance. So yeah, many to list. In terms of favorite genres, I don't have one. I'll be honest. I love all types of movies. Horror is probably the genre I watch the most, but man, there's nothing like a great comedy or a wonderful drama or a cool, intelligent sci-fi flick. Or I love Westerns, and I'm also, you may find this surprising, I love romantic comedies. I love them. I'm a sucker for them. So, don't have a favorite genre. I wish I did. It would have probably made for a shorter answer, but I don't. And you guys know that I will always celebrate people and things that I think are great. That's essentially the point of this podcast. There are plenty of critics out there and people talking about things they don't like and the things they're unhappy with. In fact, I think that's the majority of social media. So what I want to do with this podcast is celebrate the things we do like. Why are we wasting time on stuff we didn't necessarily care for? We should be talking about what we love and sharing it with our friends. So good questions. Thank you so much for sending those in. I've also got a question here from Tim. He wrote me back when the podcast first started, and he says, you've talked about working with Rawlings Sporting Goods and traveling around and being from St. Louis, which is a great baseball community. What is your best baseball memory? A fine question, Tim. Thanks very much. But here's the deal. I'm going to answer that in another podcast. And the reason is before I answer that question about my favorite baseball memory, since it is summer and it is the season, I thought I would talk about, and some of you have asked me to talk about this, my time working with Rawlings Sporting Goods. And I have a ton of fond memories about it, but it had its ups and downs. So I will, quite honestly, I'll just start from the beginning. I went to college in St. Louis at a place called Webster University, where I was, it's a private liberal arts school where I was studying screenwriting and English and media communications. And one semester I decided to go to London and study abroad, or two or three, while I was while I had, you know, had the opportunity. So I spent a semester in London, and I will talk about that at another time. I'd love to share stories about my time in London with you. So when I got back, it was now the summer, or you know, the start of summer break, 1999. And I was offered a job, a part-time job, from a buddy of mine, my good, one of my best friends, Jason, who hired me on at Werenberg Theaters. I'm sure if you've listened to earlier podcasts, you heard me talk about that. So he had a new job. He was running the mailroom at Rawlings Sporting Goods. And the building, the corporate office, was in Fenton, Missouri, and it was 10 minutes from my parents' house where I was still living. So he said, hey, I need some help in the mailroom. He worked 8 to 5. He goes, 9 to 3, you'll work part-time, and you'll come in and help me run the mailroom from 9 to 3 every day. And so, so I get back from London, and I immediately have a job. It's like, oh, my gosh, awesome. I can start making money this summer and then worry about school again in the fall. So that summer, I became the assistant mail. I was happy to be called the mail boy. What I would do is when packages were delivered in the mornings from UPS and FedEx, I would throw them all on this giant cart and cart it around the office and drop the packages off to the offices and the cubicles of the people who were getting the recipients. So I would walk around and talk to me, hey, here's your package, how's your day, or whatever, and do that. And then the mail would come in, and I would sort through the mail and put them in the mail. So, oh, a letter for Steve Rogers or whatever, and I would throw it in Steve Rogers' mailbox, or a letter that just says marketing department. I'd throw it in the all that. I would also, you know, I'm just giving you the basics of the job. I would mail out invoices, accounts payable invoices accounts receivable, accounts payable. I would send out mail for both of them. When people had samples to ship or something like that, I would send those out via UPS. And other than that, I would also, I started ordering inventory, office supplies, and it was basic grunt work, but it was cool. It was at Rawlings Sporting Goods, the official baseball of the major leagues, and the glove and bat and batting gloves and helmet and everything. That it was the official glove of Major League Baseball as well. So it was a great company to work for, and I was having a lot of fun working part-time. And I got to do some cool things, go to Busch Stadium where the St. Louis Cardinals would play and get tickets to games and stuff like that every now and again. And it had some nice perks. So, and a lot of fun, cool people working there too. And every now and again, I'd be walking through the hallways with my mail cart. And I remember one day I turned a corner, and if I came so close to slamming the mail cart into the shins, the package cart into the shins of a man who it took me a second to recognize. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And he said, hey, it's okay. And my goodness, it was Lou Brock visiting somebody at Rawlings. And I went, oh, Mr. Brock, I apologize. And he said, oh, no, you're fine. You're fine, young man, or whatever. And couldn't have been more gentlemanly. And every now and again, I would see a major league star in the office. Very often, I would be sending gloves and things to major league stars, to the different baseball organizations across the country. And it was a really cool part-time gig. Well, the end of that summer, Jason was offered a job it was either back at Werenberg Theaters as to be like a general manager of a theater. So it was going to be more money for him and everything. He was going to manage a Quick Trip gas station, which was going to be a ton of money to run one of those. Either way, he decided to take it. And they offered me the full-time mailroom position. And I took it. So I was now working 8 to 5 was in charge of the mailroom, and that was part of the human resources department. But the thing was, I had my fall semester coming up, and I was going to school. I was taking 15 credit hours every semester because I had some grants and scholarships and federal assistance that required I take no less than 15. Oh, no. You know what? It may have been 13 hours, but that didn't make sense because each class was like 3 credit hours. So I had to take 15 credit hours each semester. A full course load, essentially, is what it is. And I couldn't go below that. Otherwise, I would lose some of my, because I was paying for college myself. My parents were never in a position to be able to pay for it. And I had to. So, but with the help of some grants and scholarships and loans. So I went to my boss and I said, hey, I need this job. I love this job, but I do have a full course load coming up. What can we do? And she said, do both. So for the next year, my senior year of college, 2 semesters, I worked 40 to 45 hours a week, and did a full course load at school. So what would happen is I would, wake up at seven, shower, go to work, be there at 8, work from like 8 until my first class, which was usually around 10. So I would work from like 8 to 9:30, go to class, be there from 10 to 11, go back to the office, work there until like 2, go to a 2:30 class until 3:30 or 4 or whatever, go back to the office, and the commute from my office to my college was about 20 minutes. Go back to the office, finish up for the day, close up, and then go back to school for my night class, for my evening courses, which were always 4 hours long. So they would be, it would be from 5:30 to 9:30. Some of them were 5:30 to 8:30. But they were always my favorite classes because they were usually the most creative classes. They were my creative writing course and my playwriting courses and my, I remember one was, I forget the name of it, but it was essentially we would read a play or a novel, and then it was, I think it was called Literature into Film. So we would read a novel, and then we would watch the film based on that novel and talk about the differences and stuff like that. But that was, I remember that one, that was definitely a 6:30 or a 5:30 to 9:30 course. So for 4 hours. But they were interesting to me, so I didn't mind. So then I would be home around 10, get to bed around 10:30, and then wake up or do homework until midnight or 1 or whatever, and then get up at 7. So, and do it all over again. Looking back, and I'm not, I don't want you to think that I'm boasting or patting myself on the back too hard here. I am patting myself on the back a little bit because looking back, I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I had the energy. I mean, granted, I was 20, 21 by the end of that summer, actually. So I did. And I also had a social life somehow. I was still going out on weekends and, you know, doing what 21-year-olds do. And so, boy, but I still, I look back kind of in awe and go, boy, that year, well, that was nuts. And so... yeah. So anyway, that's what I was doing for a full year. Yeah, that would have been 2000. So, you know what? 99 going into 2000. So the summer of, 2000, yeah, it's, you know what? I did it for, and I apologize. I just want to make sure I'm giving you the full accurate story here. It was until 2001. So it was actually my junior. And yes, it. Okay, here's what happened. Forgive me for recalling this on the spot. I ended up having two senior years because during my my first senior year, my guidance counselor said, you know what, if you go one more year of school, you can leave here with two bachelor's degrees. Now, you don't have to do this. You know, she explained. She said, no, you don't have to. But if you do, you can leave with a degree. You have enough of the same general studies credits. But you could leave here for both. You could leave here with an English degree and a media communications degree. And I was enjoying school so much that I went, you know what? Yeah, why not? I'll go ahead and go another year. So a 5-year program and leave with two degrees. So that's what I ended up doing. So I did the Rawlings full-time school combo. 99, 2000, and then 2001. So it was 2 years of that, two full years. And I loved it. Again, looking back, how the hell did I do it? But I did it, and I was successful at both. And I had a blast. I was making money, going to school, paying for my books and all that stuff. Still accruing plenty of student loan debt. But doing what I could. So, cut to the summer of 2001, May of 2001. Well, I'm offered a promotion at Rawlings Sporting Goods. I've become friends with many people. They like what I do there at work. And they think, you know what? We can get you out of the mailroom. And in fact, I started... doing things outside of the mailroom, like helping write copy for the catalogs and the annual report and all this stuff. So somebody came to me and said, hey, there's a position. We're creating a position where you're going to be part of our road crew, essentially, which was part of the marketing division. So what it was event marketing. Rawlings had some vehicles that they had, like this 18-wheeler type thing, and then they were going to buy that would go out. And what would happen is they had two vehicles. One was an 18-wheeler that would go out, and it would open up, like the trailer would open up to like, and a stage would unfold, and there would be product that people could browse, and there was a lathe in there for bat making demonstrations. And there was a baseball sewing chair. That's right. There's a special chair that people sit because every baseball, maybe you don't know this, is hand sewn. There is not a machine that can sew the final stitch into a baseball. So every Major League Baseball is still hand sewn individually. So and what that means is the cover, everything's they're wound. All the innards of a baseball are wound by machine. But then to sew the leather cover onto a baseball, that's all done by hand. So there was a chair that ball sewing demonstrations could be done. And I did that for a long time. I became very good at sewing the cover on a baseball and explaining to people the history of the baseball and what all goes into them and how they're made, where, all that stuff. A lot of which I've forgotten, some of which I'll never forget because I would do these presentations like 8 times a day and I had it all memorized or whatever. And anyway, so that was one of the vehicles. The other was called the dugout. And what it was this gigantic trailer with two gigantic baseball bats crisscrossed on top. And it would open up. It was towed by a truck. It was not like an 18-wheeler like the other one. It was, which was called the Caravan, by the way, the big 18-wheeler. So the Caravan. And then and quite honestly, I think it was like a 12-wheeler. It wasn't it wasn't as big as a full 18-wheeler. It was like a slightly smaller version. But you had to have the special license to drive it, and you had to stop at weigh stations and all. You had to do everything that the typical 18-wheeler had. So the dugout would be towed, and it would open up on the side. And when it opened up, it looked like the dugout of for a baseball team. There was a bench back there, and essentially it was for selling out of. So you could have bats and gloves in there, and you could sell out of it. Well, I'm offered this job to join the event marketing road crew. And they said, hey, we're doing something new this year. One of the marketing managers, no, actually, I'm sorry, it was the VP of marketing at the time. He was a new guy at Rawlings. His name was Stan, an incredibly friendly guy. But looking back, his ideas were fine, but looking back, I think I would have yelled at him more than I ever did, and I'll tell you why. So he said, hey, I used to work for General Mills, and I have a co-op idea with Rawlings and General Mills. You are going to take a brand new Chevy Suburban that's going to be wrapped in graphics that have Rawlings on it and Major League Baseball graphics and all this stuff, and you are going to drive to every baseball stadium and go to a game, and outside of the stadium, you are going to pass out samples of Gardetto's snack mix and a new cereal called Wheaties Energy Crunch. And, you know, the little boxes that you would get in the mail or the little sample bags you'd get in the mail. So you're going to have the Suburban. It's going to tow the dugout. And the dugout will be filled with cases of Gardetto's and Wheaties Energy Crunch. You'll drive around the country on our bill. You'll get a salary and you'll get a per diem, and you'll go to all of the Major League Baseball stadiums, and pass these out. And you'll get to see the United States for free, essentially. And are you interested? And I said, Yes, of course I'm interested. And that was going to be my summer. I was going to get out of the mailroom, go on the road, and do this. And for 3 months, it was going to be May, June, July, August. So, yeah, I guess, actually, you know what? I'm sorry. June, July, August, because the first event was going to be the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska, where it always is. So I accept the job, and I'm excited. Now, a slight irony here. I have three brothers, and of the four of us, I am the least... boy, how do I put this? All my brothers, and I do too, love baseball. Love it. My brothers Jeff and John all played baseball growing up. We always, all four of us, always played wiffle ball, and we were obsessed with it. And we all would get baseball cards and trade them and, you know, spend our allowances, or whatever little money we would get on baseball cards and all this stuff. But I loved it the least. So when I told my family that I had this job and I was going to go to every major league ballpark, and they lost their minds. They're like, "What? You have no business doing that. It should be one of us." Unbelievable. They were, of course, they were excited for me, but they were also like, of all the Arnold boys, the guy who wasn't on the baseball team, but he starred in the plays and he was in show choir, he's the one that gets to go to all these things. So, but yeah, took the job, hired, they said, "Hey, you're going to have somebody else with you, of course. We need to hire somebody. So we're going to put out, you know," so they put out an ad or whatever. And, I interviewed, a few people for it. And there was a guy named Mike who was perfect for the job. A young dude, he was my age. We were both, you know, at this time, oh boy, 78. I was 20. I was what, 22, 21, 22. And he had just turned 21. And said, "Hey, man, you want to go do this?" And he, yes. So our first job is going to be the College World Series. Well, the guys who are also on the road crew, a guy's named Travis and Bryson. I've talked about Bryson on the podcast before. He was, unfortunately, a angry alcoholic. He and I were friends. He could be hilarious and a lot of fun, and he could also be the worst person on the planet. So, and I got to see both plenty of times. So the day that we're leaving, he's crazy hungover, and he's going to ride with Mike and I in the Suburban towing the dugout just to make sure everything goes okay for our first road venture. So he's crazy hungover, and he goes, "Man, I can't drive. I can't. You're going to have to drive." And I go, "Man, I've never towed anything before in my life." And he said, "That's okay. You got this. I'll hook up we'll hook up the dugout and it'll be fine." Now, every now and again, he would go, "Man, this Suburban is not big enough to tow this dugout," because the dugout was nearly the size of it was like half of an 18-wheeler's trailer. It was definitely as tall as your normal 18-wheeler trailer. And it was maybe three quarters as long. It was a Suburban had no business towing this thing. But they didn't care. And this is where guys like, you know, the marketing dude I was talking about, Stan, they should have known better. So... So we go to attach this trailer to the Suburban. I back up with the ball hitch, get it lined up. We get out of the car and attach the trailer to the ball hitch. And then there are these things called sway bars, which do exactly what they sound like. You attach them to the trailer, and then you attach them to the towing vehicle, and they keep the trailer from swaying. Well... Bryson's the only one that's ever put these things on before. So he's trying to put these things on. He can't do it. And he's so hungover, he gives up. And he says, you know what? Forget the sway bars. We'll be fine. So the Suburban, he goes, you're going to have to drive the first leg. So I get behind the wheel and I start pulling. And I go, man, Bryson, this thing's swaying pretty bad. why wouldn't they be? The sway bars aren't attached. So he goes, we'll be all right. Just go slow or whatever and we'll be fine. And he goes to sleep in the passenger seat. Mike's in the back with all of our suitcases. So he's sitting on one side of the back seat and the rest, it's just suitcases and boxes. It just packed back there. He can barely move. So I'm driving and I'm nervous as hell. Very nervous. Not only is it the first time I've ever towed something, it's something that I shouldn't be towing in the first place. It also happens to be a very rainy and very windy June morning. So we get on the highway and the wind is battering this trailer so badly that it's just swaying with the wind. And I'm white knuckling it, going about 55 miles per hour, just trying to keep this thing steady. Bryson tells me, and I think he was sort of right in this. He said, if the swaying gets too bad, speed up. Because if you speed up, what you're essentially going to do is straighten everything out because you're pulling on it and it's going to stop swaying. It's going to be pulled and it'll be pulled straight. That makes sense to me, but it's as unnatural a thing when you're towing something and it starts to sway and it feels like you're losing total control. The last thing you feel like you want to do is to hit the gas. But he was, every now and again, the swaying would get so bad that it would wake him up out of his hangover, his hangover nap, that he would just sort of shoot up in his chair, in his seat and go, speed up, speed up. So I would hit the gas, and yes, the swaying would stop momentarily. But the swaying was getting so bad that the trailer was bleeding into other people's lanes, and so I would hear honking and... And then people would pull up beside me and yell at me and all this stuff. And I was like, man, this is nuts. So we get about 50 miles or so outside of St. Louis city limits on Highway 70 on our way to Omaha. This is my first trip after just being promoted. Well, I'm driving in down Highway 70 and the swaying gets so out of control at one point that it's just terrifying. Thankfully, and I never would say this in other circumstances, there is a massive traffic jam up ahead. So I get to slow down and drive about 5 miles per hour for quite a long time. We are in this incredibly long traffic jam for a good hour. I mean, and it's annoying because, you know, we're ready to be on the road, but I could tow the thing just fine in going 5 miles per hour. So we finally get to the end of the traffic jam where there is a couple cars piled up. There was a bad accident. It didn't look to be like there were any injuries or anything like that, but it was enough to definitely close one lane of Highway 70 and cause this massive backup. So we get through it, and I'm now going 55 again, you know, driving on the highway. So what happens is a big truck, an 18-wheeler, is behind me, and I'm only doing 55. So he passes me on the left, rightfully so. But when he passed me, it caused the trailer that I'm towing to start swerving and swaying out of control. And it was now not just swerving, it was like a full fishtail. This thing was wiggling back and forth and back and forth to where it started to shift the Suburban on its own. Like we could feel the Suburban being moved. I was no longer in control of the trailer. The trailer was in control of us. Well, this wakes Bryson up. And he looks in his side mirror, sees how out of control the trailer is, puts his bare feet up on the dashboard in sort of like this weird sort of defensive crouch position. And I remember he just goes, "Here we go." That's all he said. And the next 10 seconds it seemed like forever, but the trailer is swaying so bad that that I can actually see in my rearview mirror, in my side mirror, the trailer coming around almost parallel to the Suburban. So when I look out, and then I looked out the driver's side window, and I could see the back of the trailer. It had swung up towards us. And that's when the Suburban flipped around. We slid around. We started doing a 180 in the highway, screeching wheels, crunching metal as the trailer is denting the back of the Suburban because it's twisting it so hard. The miraculous thing is it never came off the hitch, this dugout. So we spin and then spin back again. I mean, I would have loved to have seen video of how this, because, and quite honestly, we all thought we were dead. I know I did. I went, the way that this feels, and as out of control as we are, there's no way we're going to survive this, because this is going to tip us over and maybe land on us. I don't know how this is going to end. So what eventually happens is we're careening out of control. The Suburban runs off the highway, slams into, there was a very steep ditch. We slam into the ditch, but we don't go down into it. We are raised up like the front of the Titanic, because at the same time, the dugout has tipped over and has not let go of the ball pitch, the ball hitch. It twisted the metal of the hitch and the back end of the Suburban so badly, but it never let go of the hitch. So it twisted and it flipped us up like at an angle. Well, I look out, we're kind of at a stop now. And I look out the driver's side window and I see the two gigantic bats that were on top of the dugout rolling down the highway and just making a sickening noise as it does it. And the dugout itself is on its side, but still kind of sliding. And so there's sparks are flying and there's this awful screech of metal against pavement. And after, you know, everything stops. It all stops. And I look in the back seat and I ask Mike if he's okay. And I can't even see him. He's buried in luggage and boxes. And I kind of see a hand come out and start knocking him away. And he's got kind of a bump on his head. Like he's been knocked around back there. He was covered in stuff. Bryson still has his legs and feet up, but he's like, oh my God. And I'm just stunned and silent and scared. But we open up our Suburban doors and I kind of have to jump out because I'm up in the air and Bryson does the same. Mike was able to kind of just get out because he was in the back, so he was a little lower. And that's when the traffic copters from the traffic jam that we had just left made their way to us. And and I'm told that were you to watch the news that day, that you would see overhead shots of three terrified guys standing next to the Rawlings Suburban that had the Rawlings logo all over it and a turned over tractor trailer with in giant painted letters, the words Rawlings Sporting Goods on the side, shooting, facing the sky. So it was no doubt what company was responsible for this. And now everybody that had just gotten through that awful traffic jam had a brand new one to sit in because the dugout and the Suburban were blocking both lanes of the highway. And there was nothing. Everybody was just at a total standstill. And I will tell you about the aftermath of that awful wreck where thankfully nobody was hurt miraculously, because there were cars around us when this all went down. I'll tell you all about the aftermath of that next week, and I'll continue discussing that crazy job. In the meantime, something that, you know, not necessarily to work on this week, but something that we can enjoy this week. Oh, my. Will you look at that? Here come the authorities. As we're standing in the drizzling rain on a windy, unseasonably chilly June day off Highway 70. The sirens, we can hear them and see them pulling, heading towards us in the distance. Hey, talking about jobs, I think it would be fun this week if you talk with somebody that is important to you in your life, a friend, a family member, a spouse, a kid, a co-worker. Ask them, take the time to ask them, hey, if you weren't doing this for a living, what do you think you'd be doing? Or what would you like to be doing? It's always fascinating to find out what other people could, what their alternative careers and or life could be. Or what did you want to be when you were growing up? That kind of thing. Ask. And hopefully it's, you know, not in a way that's like, hey, man, we're not happy where we are now. Where would we rather be? But no, like, what else could you be doing? Or did you see yourself doing? Or what's something that you know you couldn't do, but that you wish you could? That kind of thing. Like, be a brain surgeon or be a firefighter or something that might be outside of your comfort level and or skill set. But it's always fun. It's a fun question to ask and to hear the answers and be prepared for them to go, how about you? And in fact, I will give you the answer now. I would have loved to have been a doctor of some kind. I've always been fascinated with anatomy and biology and physiology and stuff like that. So, but I didn't have the patience to that for that much schooling and or the discipline to totally commit myself to that much schooling and stuff like that. So, but I would have loved to have been something in the medical field, I think. All right. Well, by the way, next week, June 20, is it, what is it, the 24th and 25th? I will be 25th and 26th, Friday and Saturday. I will be in Lexington, Kentucky, doing stand up at Comedy Off Broadway. Two shows Friday, June 25th, and two shows Saturday, June 26th. Please go to comedyoffbroadway.com if you're in the Lexington area or anywhere near there. You want to make a road trip or whatever, and get your tickets now. It'll be my first road gig. It'll be my first stand-up performance in since March of 2020. So come watch me shake off the rust, try to remember my bits, try to get new bits to work. we'll have a very good time. That's one of my favorite places on the planet, Comedy Off Broadway in Lexington, Kentucky, June 25th and 26th. Okay. And I also wanted to tell you that in 3 weeks, there will... Goodbye!
Check out the podcast that inspired Taylor Sheridan's latest series, Landman.
There's a stretch of road in the oil-rich region of West Texas. This region of West Texas, known as the Permian Basin, is in the midst of the biggest oil boom in history. This is a story of roughnecks, billionaire wildcatters, and wannabe dreamers. My name is Christian Wallace. From Texas Monthly and Imperative Entertainment, this is Boomtown.
Boomtown.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.